A product manager collaborates with marketing and sales teams to develop roadmaps and strategies to sell products and analyze the performances of products launched in the past. A data science manager would also collaborate with business stakeholders, but in more business, in more functional areas, depending on the company and what areas the company wants the data science manager to prioritize.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Artists of Data Science podcast, the only self-development podcast for data scientists. You're going to learn from and be inspired by the people, ideas, and conversations that'll encourage creativity and innovation in yourself so that you can do the same for others. I also host open office hours. You can register to attend by going to bit.ly/ADSOH. I look forward to seeing you all there. Let's ride this beat out into another awesome episode. And don't forget to subscribe to the show and leave a 5-star review. Our guest today is a data scientist who wears many hats. He's an MBA, CAP, PMP, YouTuber, blogger, and thought leader. Though he has many identities, he has one passion: data science. He's got technical chops to deliver business value, product sense to understand user experience, and business acumen to communicate and support top-level decision-making processes. Today, he's going to be on the show to share with us his product sense and his business sense so that we can be more informed when we enter the business world as data scientists. So please help me in welcoming our guest today, founder of Analytics Explained, Tim Ennals. Tim, how's it going, man? Super excited to have you on the show. How are you doing today?
It's going terrific. Thanks for the invite, Harpreet. This is one of my favorite podcasts right now, and I'm excited to speak with you.
Oh, man, right on. You guys should see the smile on my face, man. Thank you so much for saying that. I really, really appreciate that. Before we jump into like these awesome credentials you have and the path that kind of brought you to where you are today, why don't you just tell us a little bit about like where you grew up and what was it like there?
I grew up in Alabama in a small town called Anniston, Alabama. There wasn't much to do there except fishing, and football was the hottest conversational topic there.
That's pretty cool, man. So do you have like a favorite football team? Is it like what? Alabama doesn't have a professional team, but it has a huge on the college scene, right?
There is the University of Alabama and also Auburn University. I never really chose between the two. I think they're both fantastic teams.
Yeah. How about for professional football? Like, do you have a team that you follow?
I kind of admired the 49ers.
Hey, dude, I'm not paying him to say this, ladies and gentlemen. Like, literally, San Francisco 49ers is my absolute favorite team. Like, I'm drinking out of his 49ers cup right now. I was born and raised in Sacramento, California. That's like, you know, state capital of California, but it's the nearest big city with the football team was Oakland, but now it's San Francisco. But I always grew up San Francisco fan. Super not excited to see how they're performing this year, but
Absolutely.
Still my team though, you know, got to represent. So that's cool, man. So small town, Alabama. Currently you are in Atlanta, Georgia. So I'm really interested to talk about the path that brought you to where you are. So back in Alabama, small town, what were you thinking that your future would be like when you were growing up?
I had a faint idea that my career would involve both business and information systems functions, but I wasn't quite sure what is that career path I would go on later in life.
That's cool, man. It's cool you had like a proper like path for what it is that you thought you were going to do. I thought I was going to be in computer science. Like, that's what I thought I was going to be in high school, but I guess I kind of got somehow into an adjacent-ish field, that data science. So for me, it's not too far off from where I thought I was going to be. But how about for you? When you were growing up, like, what did you think, you know, the future would be like? Like, how different is it now than what you imagined it would be?
I didn't quite imagine that I would be involved in such a technical field, which is data science. I did play around with database software back when I was real young, and other software such as Microsoft Office and so forth. But I didn't quite imagine that I would use statistical methods and use programming languages to the extent that I am now.
Yeah, man. So that's pretty cool. Like, it's always interesting how things change when you're growing up. When I was like, cause I'm significantly older than you, I'm imagining, right? So I'm 37. And when I was like in elementary school, like computers first started becoming a thing. And I remember my mom gave me a book and it was called DOS for Dummies. And so DOS is like the equivalent, I guess, of Bash for Linux or whatever it is now. So yeah, that's cool, man. So what was the journey like coming from high school to where you are now?
I would say it involved a ton of skill development and the constant improvement of how I did things, both in my personal life and in my career. I started off in my career in mostly business-related functions, and I gradually built skills that were more and more technical. I started off in telecommunications, which is a bit technical, actually. I then became a materials representative for a defense company, which entailed inventory management, procurement management, and so forth. After that, I became a product manager for another company, which entailed analyzing both product and sales data, presenting to executives, automating the product life cycles for products in our portfolio, and so forth. I then became the first data scientist in that same company, and I dealt with activities such as creating, developing machine learning and NLP deliverables in Python, creating architecture diagrams, writing technical documentation, and helping to set up the Azure cloud platform from a project planning perspective.
That's really cool, man. I had no idea you were the first data scientist at an organization. So I'm going through those challenges right now. So first data scientist to hire at my organization. So we got to talk a little bit about that a little bit later. I'm interested to see how you handle some of those challenges. So what would you say would be a experience that contributed to shaping who you are today?
I can't pinpoint one experience that shaped me into the person I am today, but there are a ton of experiences that played a small part each in influencing my subconscious decisions. I read a ton of books on business, technology, innovation, problem solving, and other subjects, which influenced my thinking in ways that I probably couldn't really predict back then. I also attended conferences about entrepreneurship, business, and data science.
That's cool, man, that you were really involved in this self-improvement, self-development of both your professional and soft kind of personal leadership skills early on in your career. And I guess that really kind of shines through in a lot of the writing that I've seen of yours. You've got some really great articles out there. One of them I thought was really interesting. It was an article on 10 innovation frameworks. So I think this is really cool. You know, having frameworks like this is really important for data scientists because it kind of gives you a model, a way of thinking. So I'm wondering if you can walk us through this article that you had written.
Sure. I could describe about 4 innovation frameworks from that article. The first one is Blue Ocean Strategy. That involves using methods to identify customers both outside of your industry and inside of your industry that are untapped and underserved. It involves researching industries outside of your current industry and specifically choosing certain industry attributes and making sure they're far above the level of the industry standards. The second one is the S-curve pattern of innovation. The basic premise of that is that iterations of systems evolve as scientific, basically each system delivers a certain function, and each system evolves until it reaches its limit in regards to that system's scientific principle. The second innovation framework is 10x thinking. This was popularized by Google, and it went by the name of moonshot thinking at that time. And this was also popularized by Grant Cardone, who's one of the top sales trainers in the world. This involves thinking of a concept such as a product, service, and so forth, and thinking about that concept, trying to imagine that concept providing a function either 10 times faster or 10 times more effectively. For example, if you set a 10x goal for yourself, you would need to rethink the approaches needed to obtain that goal from a radically different perspective. And if you were to develop a product that's 10 times more effective than what is typical for that product, you would need to rethink the physical attributes of that product at the most fundamental level. And the fourth innovation framework is 9 windows. It's a 9-window table, and it's comprised of the past, present, and future for the columns, and the system, subsystem, and supersystem as rows of that table. The system is what is used to deliver the primary function. The subsystem comprises of the components of that system, and the supersystem is comprised of the external environment and the components in which that system interacts with.
Thank you very much, man, for sharing that. I appreciate that. I like that blue ocean strategy, and I think that kind of would relate to the experiences that you might have had, and I know that I'm kind of having as the only data scientist in an organization, right? Because when a company doesn't have a data science team already there for you, it really is just a blue ocean, right? So you're able to now find pockets of opportunities that you think you might be able to offer some services and provide some value. What do you think about that?
I think that's an interesting way to look at it. It's also a great opportunity to try things that the company never tried before and put yourself into the shoes of an influencer, sort of. You would need to get executives accustomed to doing things in ways that were never done before in a company, which could be a considerable challenge depending on the company's culture, their level of analytics maturity, and their existing data architecture.
I like that. I like that word, analytics maturity. Recently doing something at work where I had to kind of gauge the analytical maturity of our organization. I used the framework set out by Tom Davenport. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, but Tom Davenport has this 5 stages of analytic maturity. And I thought that was really interesting. Are you familiar with that work at all?
I believe I've seen a diagram related to that on the Gartner website, or maybe even the Forrester website. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So when it comes to innovations, like, which framework do you think you've tended to fall back on the most with respect to your work in data science?
I would say the Blue Ocean framework is the one I think about the most by far. But data science is slightly removed from business strategy functions to a certain extent. It just depends on the company and how close data scientists work with executives to influence their decisions. But I would say 10x thinking is the one I try to use most often in all of my work, because I want to deliver work that is considerably better than what has been done before in a company, or at the very least provide data insights that were never found before in a company using techniques that were never used in that company.
I like that too, man. Like, I definitely have the same type of philosophy when it comes to anything that I do. It needs to be different than what is already out there, whether it's work you're doing inside an organization or self-development podcast for data scientists. So I'm curious, man. So, like, all this skill that you've managed to acquire and with respect to programming, and you mentioned NLP earlier, is this all just self-taught? Like, were you teaching yourself how to learn all these tools?
Yes, this was all self-taught. I self-taught my skills all throughout my career. And I just had an internal motivation to continually learn and upgrade my skills. That's why I have so many certifications, and that's why I've taken so many classes past the point of just earning my bachelor's and master's degree and calling it a day.
Dude, like, that is the most underrated skill for a data scientist, probably the most important skill for a data scientist if you want to really excel in your career, is what Tim just mentioned, just the skill of not only just learning effectively, but the skill of having curiosity, being curious about things and being willing to put yourself in uncomfortable situations where you might feel like you don't know what the fuck is going on, and teaching yourself, right? Like, teaching yourself, educating yourself, being resourceful enough to find the resources and then act on what it is that you found. Like, that is a skill that I think people can greatly, greatly benefit from. You mentioned just a little bit earlier about how business strategy is kind of something that you seem missing from data scientists. And I definitely agree with that. I think we get too caught up in Hacker Inc. and machine learning algorithms, at least, you know, the ones who are breaking into the field or new-ish to the field. But at the end of the day, man, like, you are hired by a business to either make them more money or help them reduce costs. So it's hard to do that if you can't really communicate with them or understand business strategy. So I'm wondering if you have, we talked about innovation frameworks. Let's talk about business strategy frameworks that every data scientist should know. Do you have any that you could share with us?
I think companies would benefit if data scientists view work from the perspective of their business stakeholders. I'll describe about three business frameworks that may be applicable to data science. The first is the TOES matrix. This is a more advanced version of the SWOT matrix, which encompasses strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. There are four strategies under the TOES matrix framework. The first is the strength opportunity strategy. This involves finding strengths and opportunities where you can exploit those strengths. This is also a great way to exploit your company's competitive advantages. The second is the strength threat strategy. This involves using your strengths to work against threats against your company. The second one is the weakness opportunity strategy. This involves trying to bridge your weaknesses so that your company can be in a better position to capitalize on opportunities. And the fourth is the weakness threat strategy. This involves the avoidance of external factors that could negatively impact your company for which you have no strengths to counteract against. The second is customer journey. This involves all the touch points that customers interact with when they first encounter your company or brand, and then ultimately work their way towards purchasing your product or service. And the third business framework is competitive analysis matrix. This is a matrix where you compare your company against your competitors in a table, and you use various attributes such as prices, product attributes, marketing channels, and so forth to see how your company compares within your industry. And this type of information could be used to develop and implement the strategies that are most appropriate for your company.
Thanks for sharing that. I think one important kind of theme throughout all that is having an understanding of your organization. Like, I think that is something that data scientists really need to spend some time doing. It, not just understanding the data in the company, but understanding what real world processes and mechanisms generated that data that you're now analyzing. I think once you have a understanding of those real world processes, i.e. what the business does, that will make the strategizing part a little bit more, definitely far more informed, and you'll end up being a better data scientist for it. So what can a data scientist do to build and develop their product sense or their business acumen?
Sure. I have a few suggestions in regards to that question. The first is to determine the areas of business that most interest you. For me, it's business strategy and four functional domains, which are customers, sales, marketing, and products. My second suggestion is, if your company is public, read its annual and quarterly reports, and look at the sections about your company's primary annual objectives, their product-related initiatives, and their financial performance. It also helps to look at functional analytics PowerPoints or presentations that were developed in the past, so that you could use that information as a basis for the products you work on in the future, in which you would discuss with business stakeholders on a normal basis. That'll give you a clear idea of what's been done before. That way, the work you produce in the future provides added value on top of that.
Thank you very much for sharing that. Definitely agree with that. And like, it could just be as easy as just asking your boss, right? Like, show some interest in the organization that you're working for, but, you know, ask your boss. And if you see a senior guy walking around the hallways, just engage with him, ask him a question about the business. If, you know, if there's a press release out on something or a company-wide email, just show interest in the organization and you'll definitely be better for it. And communicating, I think, with people in other departments is super, super important as well. I guess that's the part like I miss most about being in the office is those random encounters where you bump into people and like, oh, what are you working on? Oh, well, I think I might be able to help in this capacity or that capacity. The end there, you mentioned making sure that the work that we do ends up delivering value. But I think it's kind of the well-known quote-unquote statistics that 80-something percent of data science projects fail, right? So in your experience, what do you think are some reasons that data science projects fail? And how can we as data scientists prevent that from happening?
Sure. There are two reasons that I can go into about why I think data science projects fail. The first is a lack of emphasis on business impact. I've seen some people focus too much on the technology and not enough on the business stakeholders. Seth Godin has a quote that says, and I'm paraphrasing, it says, focus more on your customers than your products. I think it helps to have an entrepreneurial mindset when being a data scientist and to look at your business stakeholders as customers and your deliverables as products. A second reason I could get into is inadequate data infrastructure. Sometimes the data infrastructure just isn't at a level that where you could fully use it to produce data science deliverables at an enterprise level. I think it helps to have an established team of data engineers or business intelligence developers that have already built a robust system that allows for the use of data pipelines and reciprocal data systems, which would then allow for the use of predictive analytics and prescriptive analytics at the enterprise level.
What's up, artists? I would love to hear from you. Feel free to send me an email to theartistsofdatascience@gmail.com. Let me know what you love about the show. Let me know what you don't love about the show. And let me know what you would like to see in the future. I absolutely would love to hear from you. I've also got open office hours that I will be hosting, and you can register by going to bit.ly/ADSOH. I look forward to hearing from you all, and I look forward to seeing you in the office hours. Let's get back to the episode. I'm curious, man. So dealing with the same kind of stuff right now is that lack of that data infrastructure, lack of data architecture in the current organization. So you're talking about lack of infrastructure, lack of data architecture. That's a problem that I'm currently dealing with at my job, being the first data scientist there. So there's challenges there to essentially rein in what seems like the Wild West in terms of data to organize it. What are some best practices that you have or that you can think of for those of us who are in, let's say, large enterprise that is very kind of low down on its analytic maturity, and we're trying to install some good infrastructure for data?
I think it's a good practice to at least have a data dictionary so that employees know what the fields actually mean, especially new employees. I think it also helps to have data-related professionals involved in the creation of the data infrastructure and to make sure they provide input in regards to what's wrong with the data, what needs improvement, and so forth. For example, the customer data may have issues where multiple customer names are associated with each customer. I think that's an issue that many, many companies have right now. And I believe analysts can also provide feedback in regards to what executives want, because functional analysts tend to deal with business stakeholders on a more frequent basis than data scientists, from what I've observed.
Yeah, data dictionary is huge, man. my company or previous company, no blast, but the only company I've ever had where there is the adequate data dictionary was as a clinical trial statistician. And that's because that is like required by law to have stuff like that. But having a adequate data dictionary, like that's super, super helpful. I mean, that you could spend 1 to 2 weeks just talking to people, trying to make sense of what all the different fields and the data mean before you can do anything with it. Because I think a lot of data scientists, when they're breaking into the field, they're used to these nice, clean data sets, just one CSV, whatever, loaded into your Jupyter notebook and build your model, have fun. But in reality, more often than not, it's these data sets are dispersed, multiple databases, multiple tables. You got to find the way to associate the two, find the keys between the two. And some of them might have some really cryptic column names, right? And you can't really decipher just by reading it. Nobody knows what that column means, but apparently it's useful for every report that they use or whatever. I mean, that's overstating the case, but yeah, data dictionaries are important. And I guess the moral of the story in my entire rant up until this point is just the need to really be able to deal with ambiguity and not just be stunned into inaction because things just seem so vague, I guess. So I really enjoy this article you wrote, 12 problem-solving strategies. I know the audience would absolutely love to hear about them. Can you walk us through a few of those?
Sure. The first technique is retrograde analysis. Work backwards from your goal. With this approach, you determine the goal that you're trying to achieve, and you work backwards from the goal to your present situation. I find this to be a great way to simplify a problem and not delve too much in the details that may not be relevant to the ultimate central objective you're trying to achieve. The second technique is to divide the problem into subproblems. It's easier to solve one subproblem at a time rather than to try to solve the entire problem when the subproblems are combined and reinforcing each other. The second technique is root cause analysis. This involves identifying the root causes of the problem and addressing those root causes so that the problem doesn't occur in the first place. I find that it helps to identify the root causes of each of the subproblems as a way to simplify the process. The fourth technique, and I make this the last technique, is the Phoenix Checklist. I think this is a fantastic framework to consider because it encompasses 38 context-free questions. This framework was developed by the Central Intelligence Agency, and the questions are segmented into two sections. The first is a list of questions used to define a problem, and the second is a list of questions used to define the plan to solve the problems. You can find this checklist by simply searching for it on Google.
Do you have a favorite technique out of the ones you mentioned?
I would say my favorite and the most applicable to most situations is to divide a problem into subproblems. I find this an easy way to manage problems and make them both easier to understand and to solve in a more sequential manner. You could solve one subproblem at a time and start with the easiest subproblem and eventually progress to the most difficult and complex subproblem within the overall problem.
That was going to be my favorite one that I was going to say as well. It's absolutely my favorite technique. It's taking a large problem, just breaking it down into as small as discrete chunks as possible. Actually, I was interviewing somebody recently, maybe it was earlier this month, Fred Pellard, and he wrote the book, How to Decide. It's not released yet. It releases in November. I was going to pull out a PDF copy of what I had, but that book is amazing. If you get your hands on that thing, I think you will really, really enjoy it. So when I get into product management and data science, so I guess let me ask you this question. What is the difference between a product manager, just a data science product manager, and a data science manager?
Sure. A product manager collaborates with marketing and sales teams to develop roadmaps and strategies to sell products and analyze the performances of products launched in the past. A data science manager would also collaborate with business stakeholders, but in more functional areas, depending on the company and what areas the company wants the data science manager to prioritize.
And in what ways do you think let me rephrase that. What should the relationship between the data scientist and their product manager be like?
Sure. A data science team could view the product manager as a business stakeholder, obviously, and help that product manager fulfill the mission of launching products that can garner the most sales possible in the market. The data science team could work on projects involving automating life cycles, perhaps use techniques such as customer churn, which could relate to improving the performance of products and so forth.
Yeah. So what can data scientists learn from product managers?
Product manager is considerably more business focused than perhaps a data manager, depending on organizational layout of a company. What a data scientist lead or data scientist manager could learn from a product manager is to make sure that their activities revolve around one central purpose, which is maximizing the business impact for the company and collaborating with the right business stakeholders, whether they're from sales, marketing, or a customer success group, to ensure that the deliverables are as relevant to the company's objectives as possible.
So you've obviously passed the PMP exam. I'm curious, what ways has your experience studying for that exam made you a better data scientist?
Well, projects involve producing a deliverable or product within a set time limit. And I would say when I studied for the PMP exam, it helped me look at the work required to create data science deliverables as perhaps structured projects, even though there are other ways to look at it. There's the agile approach, obviously, which is growing in popularity at a fast rate, by the way.
Thank you very much, Matt, for sharing that. I appreciate that. So we're kind of this thread here now of like strategic thinking and product sense and all that. I'm wondering if you could share some tips on what a data scientist can do to be more out of the box with their thinking.
A data scientist, well, it helps to view things from the perspective of your business stakeholders and make sure your activities are as relevant to the company's objectives as possible. It also helps to read books outside of the field of data science on topics such as business, innovation, problem solving, and so forth. It helps to also attend conferences as much as possible, because the speakers at those conferences, in many cases, spent more than 10,000 hours more than you on topics where you want to excel at. And conferences also allow you to network with people who have similar ambitions and goals as you.
Yeah, and definitely agree with that. Sorry, go on.
And one last point is to make sure to capitalize on trends and emerging trends as soon as possible, because you'll be ahead of the curve and you can make progress in the field before it fully establishes and build a great name for yourself, before that field fully establishes and it attracts a great deal of people who you may later need to perhaps compete with.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that, dude. Like, read more books. And something that said reminded me of the Jim Quick quote, like when you read a book or when you hear somebody talk about their experience, you're able to like download decades of information in days. I'm curious, Matt, you mentioned Seth Godin earlier. Are you a fan of his? Like which works of his are you most inspired by?
Sure. I read two books by Seth Godin. The first was Linchpin, which involved a concept, and I believe you've mentioned this in your podcast before.
Yeah, dude, that book is phenomenal. Like, that book is amazing. Hands down, my favorite book.
And the main takeaway I got from that book was to make yourself as indispensable to your company as possible. And even if your company isn't fully at the level where it could maximize its use of your skills, you could still use those skills in another company. And I just think it's extremely beneficial to your career to max out the opportunities you have in your current company to help it grow financially and to develop yourself as a person. The second book is Purple Cow, which involves, which is more related to entrepreneurship. And the main takeaway I got from that is to differentiate yourself in a market in ways that are practical and productive.
Yeah, like Linchpin is kind of about intrapreneurship, where you're just kind of starting your own thing inside of a company. And like you mentioned, Purple Cow is about the entrepreneurship. Linchpin is awesome. And just that concept of like the resistance, the lizard brain. So in Linchpin, he like that the whole entire lizard brain and resistance concept, he brings up a book called The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield. And I just have it here on my desk for little bits of motivation. Like each page is like just like a little passage, and you just get some good, I guess, fuel in your tank to fight that resistance. But yeah, Seth Godin's book, Linchpin, is absolutely amazing. Highly recommend it. Because as data scientists, like we are, most of the time we are entrepreneurs, right? We're doing something brand new that nobody's ever done in an organization that a lot of people in the organization don't even understand or have the capacity to do. So you've got to come in and you're really laying the foundation for years to come for this company. And if you treat it like your own little entrepreneurial initiative, but inside of a much larger organization, I think you'd be a lot more successful with that. Do you subscribe to any like business newsletters or anything like that? Like, what are you, how are you consuming this information?
Thanks for asking that. I meant to add that to the question about business acumen. The publications I most recommend are Gartner and McKinsey. I subscribe to the newsletters for those websites. Some other websites to consider are Harvard Business Review, MIT Technology Review, and there are others I can't quite think of at the moment.
Yeah, I'll definitely look into that as well. I've got a separate email address that collects all my email newsletters and stuff like that. And so I'll look into that. And I'm kind of guilty of it myself. Like I don't read a whole lot about like business strategy. That's kind of not true. I read a lot about strategy in general and strategy and how to solve problems and leadership. But I've never really read anything from like Harvard Business Review or Gartner or Forrester or anything like that. So I guess that's what I'm kind of trying to say is like, yeah, I understand how business works, understand leadership and strategy, but I never read those type of publications. And I think that is one aspect of just a more well-rounded data scientist. So thank you for those recommendations. I'm definitely going to be adding those to my newsletter collection inbox that I have. So yeah, thank you for that. So to talk to us a bit about emotional intelligence and why that's important for data scientists.
There are three points that I think data scientists should consider when it comes to emotional intelligence. The first is empathy. I think it's important to think from the perspective of the people you work around with and your business stakeholders. Try to consider their life experiences and how those experiences shape them into the person they are and the values they have and their motives. The second point is kindness. I think it helps to let people know their unique strengths and contributions to your team and make them feel understood and appreciated. And it helps to, I think also helps to do things like buy lunch for people. At least that was, I think that was good advice during when times were normal, but it helps to buy lunch for people, just have genuine conversations with them. I try to go by the platinum rule when I deal with people. I'm sure you've heard of the golden rule, but the platinum rule involves treating people the way they want to be treated. And the third point is building connections. I think it's great to talk about topics outside of work every now and then, just so people feel energized and feel good overall about going to work and associating positive emotions with work. I think it helps to build common ground and bring up topics such as sports, favorite shows, favorite movies, things like that, so that you can just build a stronger bond with people and you can establish more trust within your team. And I think that kind of approach and attitude can spread outside of a team into an entire department and build the culture in a positive way.
Thank you very much for sharing that. Yeah, and it becomes harder nowadays, like you mentioned, times are not normal anymore. But yeah, like that's something I definitely need to up my game on as well, is just reaching out to more people at work and being connected with more people than just, you know, my stakeholders and people who I work with. Especially tough when like the only data scientist in the organization. I think in that sense, it's even more important to reach out and be in touch with people. Because there's lots of days where I can go a week and the only person I'll talk to in that week, or at least message with or get on a meeting with is like my media manager, and like my media manager is not a data scientist. So I don't talk to him much about data science stuff. So yeah, it's important to get to know the actual person, I guess. Thank you very much for sharing that. Really appreciate it. So last final question here before we jump into a real quick random round. It is 100 years in the future. Tim, what do you want to be remembered for?
I want to be remembered as someone who built something great, whether it's a product or whether I wrote a book or whether it's ideas, which I'm remembered for. I think building something greater than yourself is a great way to build a legacy and also to differentiate yourself from other people. That's probably how I would explain it.
Nice, man. I like that. So talk about writing a book. Is that something that you've currently had in the works? Is that something you're doing? I know you write a lot for your blog.
I did write a book in the past, but I've since unpublished it. But I do plan on creating a digital product in the future. Actually, multiple digital products, which I will likely place on my website within the next couple of months and over the next couple of years.
Oh, nice. So a digital product, like kind of like a course of some sort, or like an ebook or something?
I'm leaning more towards a course, nice. But I'm looking at all options as of now.
Nice. Yeah, I've been trying to get more into writing. I'm not writing a book or anything like that. I'm just to exercise that written communication skill. And, you know, the official website for the podcast is going to be launching early next year as well. And it's going to be accompanied by a blog. And I just want to write on topics that I find really interesting, that take some of these really interesting ideas that I come across in books and I collide them with data science and try to create a new perspective. So I'm looking forward to launching that. So do you have like I know you said you're not currently working on a book, but you got your blog. Do you have like a routine or like a creative practice that you have established for yourself daily?
Sure. Whenever I begin to write something or work on any type of video, I try to find at least 5 high quality references and also state those references at the bottom of an article I write or in the video description of a video. And also try to explain topics in a way that hasn't been done before. I would say I have a highly analytical mind, and I feel energized by finding and communicating insights that weren't communicated before and at depths that weren't explored before.
Yeah, man. I feel the same way. Like just doing creative things, like it's super, super addicting. Like, I used to really make these, spend hours making these like Instagram carousels and quote graphics and all this stuff for the podcast, just because it was such a joy of like colliding existing ideas together in a new combination of words, colors, and presentation to create something that probably never existed before, man. Such an exhilarating, addicting feeling. I absolutely love it. So let's jump into a quick lightning round here. First question here is, what are you currently most excited about or currently exploring?
I guess what I'm most excited about is the concept of entrepreneurship and trying to blend that with the technical topics I've worked with in the past. As I mentioned before, I want to provide insights in a qualitative manner in ways that weren't done before. Honestly, if I did not do that, I would feel like I would perform a disservice to myself by not chasing my dreams, or at least going for a side gig within my career where I can showcase my strengths, which I'm perhaps not using in my regular jobs.
I love that, man. That's 100% true, man. It's good to have like a diverse talent stack, diverse set of skills, and do something that complements or uses some other aspect of your current work skill. Actually, I have a blog post that I've written but haven't published yet that is around this topic that you're just discussing. Definitely link that to whenever I publish it. What are you most inspired by right now?
What I'm most inspired by is my favorite author in the personal development field. He spent years writing each of his books, and his books contain more insights than even the current books written today, from what I've experienced. This author is Napoleon Hill, and his book, Think and Grow Rich, provided more insights far more insights than I expected the first time I read it. And the main takeaway I got from that is that each thought is associated with synapses in your mind. And as you change your thoughts, you change the physical composition of your brain, and your actions, your subconscious decisions begin to change as your mindset changes.
Yeah, I definitely have to check that out. Been recommended more than once, actually. And it's actually available on Spotify, if I remember correctly, because I added it to my list. So there's like a free version of it, like audiobook version of it on Spotify. So if anybody's interested, I go check that one out. So what do you believe that other people think is crazy?
I believe that misinformation is one of the biggest, is becoming one of the biggest problems our society is facing. Somebody could use a tool as simple as Microsoft Paint to influence the decisions of thousands of people, which sounds crazy, but it seems to have happened this year. And I think technology such as deepfake and voice replication software could exacerbate that problem. And it'd be interesting to see how world governments and public corporations deal with this issue as it perhaps grows more prominent over the next few years.
Yeah, definitely agree with you on that, man. The deepfakes are super, super scary. If you could have a billboard placed anywhere, what would you put on it and why?
On that billboard, I would probably put a message such as just not doing what everyone else is doing. Try to work on areas where your strengths, your passions, and your society's needs overlap. And also, another benefit is these types of goals. Doing this helps you find the purpose in life that is perhaps the best fit for you, and the one where you can make the most progress, and also enjoy the journey as you're in the progress of fulfilling that purpose.
Thanks very much for that, man. So what are you currently reading?
I'm mostly focusing on listening to a variety of podcasts at the moment, but the last high quality book I read was The Ride of a Lifetime by Roger Iger, who was the previous CEO of Walt Disney. He describes his experiences with Marvel Studios, Pixar Studios, and so forth. And one of the takeaways I got from that book was a part where he describes an analytics team and how it was so bureaucratic that it dramatically slowed down the decision-making processes among executives. That was an example of analytics done wrong. And I think analytics employees and managers can learn from that specific example provided in that book. And also towards the end of that book, he provides 20 principles on leadership, which I think every manager should aspire to.
Nice, man. I'll definitely add that to the reading list and to the show notes. So what podcasts are you currently listening to?
Some podcasts I can mention are Practical AI. And in fact, one of the hosts for that used to host meetups at Georgia Tech on deep learning, which I went to almost every month. Another podcast is Hardcore History, which delves into historical events throughout American history and other countries as well. And another podcast is Tim Ferriss's podcast. And of course, yours as well.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I appreciate that. Yeah, Tim Ferriss is, I like his podcast a lot. He got some of the most awesome people on there. I was just listening to him over the weekend. He had episode with, the latest episode he did with one of my idols, Naval Ravikant. So he did an interview with him a couple of years ago, two or three years ago, but recently just did another one with him. Super good man, Naval. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but God, Naval Ravikant is the man. So what song do you have on repeat?
One song I have on repeat and which I've liked for a long time was Ordinary People by John Legend.
Nice one, man. Nice one. So I'm going to go ahead and open up the random question generator now and pull this up. Here it goes, man. What's something you wish you figured out sooner?
I wish I got into a more technical field earlier in my career, because technical fields tend to have higher demand, although they require considerably more effort when it comes to continually learning new topics, especially in fields such as data science, where the landscape changes on almost a monthly basis.
Nice. Yeah, definitely agree with you. Like, data science is a field for lifelong learners. Absolutely, man. You gotta be a lifelong learner if you want to thrive and make it to the top in this field. If you could live in a book, TV show, or movie, what would it be?
Great question. There's so many books, TV shows, and movies to choose from. And a lot of them provide so many conflicts that it's hard for me to imagine I would want to live in certain environments.
You like real world? The real world is getting a free, like real world as in the one we live in, not the MTV show from a while back. All right, fair enough. What is one of the great values that guides your life?
Great value that guides my life is continuous learning. I believe your job of learning isn't done after you obtain your high school diploma, bachelor's or master's. The world is a huge place, and it's a good practice to learn as much as possible about topics related to where you're trying to go.
I dig it, man. It's awesome. The last one here, let's do pet peeves. Do you have any pet peeves?
Sure. I guess one pet peeve I have is probably lack of integrity. Actually, lack of character. I think character plays a bigger role in leadership than many people considered up until present times, where that might be more obvious. I think character is perhaps the top trait of any leader or any employee you're considering to hire onto your team.
Absolutely agree with you, man. Integrity, high integrity, strong character. I mean, part of the reason that I became a student of Stoic philosophy was just to learn how to better train and discipline my character, which I think is definitely an important skill to have. Tim, how can people connect with you? Where can they find you online?
You can search for my name on LinkedIn. You can also find me on my website, analyticsexplained.com. And my name is also searchable on YouTube as of now, where you can find my YouTube channel.
Right on, man. I will most definitely include links to that in the show notes. Tim, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be on the show today. Really, really appreciate having you here. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It was a great honor to be invited to your podcast.